Chapter 34. A Voyage of Discovery. It would be altogether impossible for me to give any idea of the utter astonishment which overcame the professor on making this extraordinary discovery. Amazement, incredulity, and rage were blended in such a way as to alarm me. During the whole course of my life I had never seen a man at first so chapfallen, and then so furiously indignant. The terrible fatigues of our sea voyage, the fearful dangers we had passed through, had all, gone for nothing. We had to begin them all over again, instead of progressing, as we fondly expected. During a voyage of so many days, we had retreated. Every hour of our expedition on the raft had been so much lost time. Presently, however, the indomitable energy of my uncle overcame every other consideration. "So," he said, between his set teeth, "fatality will play me these terrible tricks. The elements themselves conspire to overwhelm me with mortification. Air, fire, and water combine their united efforts to oppose my passage. Well, they shall see what the earnest will of a determined man can do. I will not yield, I will not retreat even one inch, and we shall see who shall triumph in this great contest, man or nature." Standing upright on a rock, irritated and menacing, Professor Hardwig, like the ferocious Ajax, seemed to defy the fates. I, however, took upon myself to interfere, and to impose some sort of check upon such insensate enthusiasm. "Listen to me, uncle," I said, in a firm but temperate tone of voice, "there must be some limit to ambition here below. It is utterly useless to struggle against the impossible. Pray listen to reason. We are utterly unprepared for a sea voyage. It is simply madness to think of performing a journey of 500 leagues upon a wretched pile of beams, with a counterpane for a sail, a paltry stick for a mast, and a tempest to contend with. As we are totally incapable of steering our frail craft, we shall become the mere plaything of the storm, and it is acting the part of madmen if we, a second time, run any risk upon this dangerous and treacherous central sea." These are only a few of the reasons and arguments I put together, reasons and arguments which to me appeared unanswerable. I was allowed to go on without interruption for about 10 minutes. The explanation to this I soon discovered. The professor was not even listening, and did not hear a word of all my eloquence. "To the raft," he cried in a hoarse voice, when I paused for a reply. Such was the result of my strenuous effort to resist his iron will. I tried again, I begged and implored him, I got into a passion, but I had to deal with a will more determined than my own. I seemed to feel like the waves which fought and battled against the huge mass of granite at our feet, which had smiled grimly for so many ages at their puny efforts. Hans, meanwhile, without taking part in our discussion, had been repairing the raft. One would have supposed that he instinctively guessed at the further projects of my uncle. By means of some fragments of cordage, he had again made the raft seaworthy. While I had been speaking, he had hoisted a new mast and sail, the latter already fluttering and waving in the breeze. The worthy professor spoke a few words to our imperturbable guide, who immediately began to put our baggage on board and to prepare for our departure. The atmosphere was now tolerably clear and pure, and the northeast wind blew steadily and serenely. It appeared likely to last for some time. What, then, could I do? Could I undertake to resist the iron will of two men? It was simply impossible if even I could have hoped for the support of Hans. This, however, was out of the question. It appeared to me that the Icelander had set aside all personal will and identity. He was a picture of abnegation, that I could hope for nothing from one so infatuated with and devoted to his master. All I could do, therefore, was to swim with the stream. In a mood of stolid and sullen resignation, I was about to take my accustomed place on the raft when my uncle placed his hand upon my shoulder. "There is no hurry, my boy," he said, "we shall not start until tomorrow." I looked the picture of resignation to the dire will of fate. "Under the circumstances," he said, "I ought to neglect no precautions. As fate has cast me upon these shores, I shall not leave without having completely examined them." In order to understand this remark,